This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, who is my accompanist.
Generally usual.
You know. What's our next question, Layla?
We have an email from Sue. Thank you for all the information you provide. It is much appreciated. I have lupus and Sjogren's.
That's an interesting combo because those are two autoimmune diseases.
Yeah.
You know, and there may be some overlap because, you know, when God created diseases, he didn't, you know, say, I'll create a lupus. Okay, I'm done. Now I'll create a Sjogren's.
And then on Sunday?
Right. Boy, that was tiring, you know, like when it's sick. Yeah. So, their autoimmune diseases, the characteristic of lupus could be that it affects any organ of the body.
Yeah.
They analogize lupus to the wolf that ravages the body, and it can affect the brain, it can affect the heart and the skin. Certainly the kidneys, the eyes, there's many manifestations of lupus. Mm-hmm. Sjogren's, did you say?
Yes,
Sjogren's. Sjogren's is a disease that is associated with some of the features of lupus, actually.
Yeah.
Certainly there's dryness of the mucous membranes as a feature that people with dry mouth, dry eyes.
Sue wants to know if there are any supplements that she should not take and which might make her autoimmune situation worse.
I think what she's driving at is the thought that since the strategy for dealing with this is to block or suppress the immune system, many supplements purport to augment the immune system.
Yes.
I mean, I wish I had a buck for every, advertisement or every product promotion, which is based on let's fend off colds and flus, you know, it's flu season. I mean, we even have products, you know, in our lineup like that, like oregano.
Oregano, vitamin C.
Right. Which we talk about as, you know, ways to, as a bulwark against infection. But it's not that simple. It's not like, I've said this in the past, I'll reiterate it. The immune system is not like a dimmer switch, you know, which you push up and the immune system is strong and you push down and it's weaker. It's, if you can imagine a dimmer switch in not just two dimensions, but maybe hundreds of dimensions, because there's so many aspects to the immune system. So the patients with lupus are both immune hyperactivated and immune suppressed at the same time. They're immune dysregulated. So supplements that we like for immune support often have a dual benefit. They can be beneficial for autoimmune conditions, but they can also regulate, enable people to be more resistant to infections.
Right. It's kind of the Goldilocks.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. The Goldilocks effect. Not too hot, not too cold, just right. That being said, there's some people who would argue that you shouldn't be taking something like an echinacea long-term if you have an autoimmune condition.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't be taking echinacea long-term anyway.
Anyway, right, yeah. So it's periodic, you know, maybe during the season or if you feel like you're coming down with something or during a cold or flu. So, you know, you've really, I think, hit on a big nutritional controversy.
Yeah.
And we could write like a long essay on this subject, gathering information from different sources, and we might have pro and con on that, you know, that...
Yeah.
So what are some of the immune-enhancing things that we talk about? Well, oregano, okay. I don't think oregano is bad, per se, for this condition.
Right. Olive leaf.
Probiotics. I think probiotics are immune-enhancing, but they're also immune-regulating.
Yes.
So they help to heal leaky gut, which may have a beneficial effect in this condition.
Melatonin may be questionable.
Right. Melatonin has been questioned in autoimmunity, but I don't see the really strong, robust evidence against it.
Right. There was one scenario, I think this was brought up by Dr. Leo Galland, he said in Crohn's disease that melatonin is not particularly helpful or recommended.
However, it is helpful in irritable bowel syndrome.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is not quite as severe or inflammatory.
Yes.
So, you know, mushroom extracts, you know, things like AHCC, reishi mushroom, are these bad? Are they going to make the immune system stronger and counteract some of the immunosuppressive drugs? I don't know the answer for sure.
Right.
I don't think it's really been experimentally verified. On a theoretical basis, there may be some cautions about that.
Sure.
But I really think there's a dearth of research on that.
Sue's a 74-year-old female who exercises regularly, eats a fairly healthy diet.
Well, that's good in light of the condition she has.
Yeah. But she does have high blood pressure, which is being treated.
Okay.
She also does intermittent fasting on a 16-8.
That's, by the way, wonderful for autoimmunity. And it just came out in an article that, there have been two big articles. One was a review article in December that talked about the benefits of intermittent fasting. And for cognitive, for cardiovascular, for metabolic, like diabetes, but also for inflammatory conditions. And then there was an article that said that you can really tamp down inflammation, which is a key element of conditions like scleroderma and...
Sjogren's and lupus.
It's Sjogren's in this case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They both start with S, so I get confused.
Right. So, intermittent fasting is a very good idea. And also in all autoimmunity, it's best to eliminate gluten and dairy, especially cow's milk.
Paleo diet. It's actually called
nightshades.
It's called the AIP, the autoimmune paleo diet,
which has
been popularized by Terry Walls for MS.
Sarah Ballantyne as well.
Right.
AIP. All good. All very, very good. So we hope you feel better soon. Thank you. Your email.
Well, you know, with her, it's not a matter of feeling better. I think she's someone who's coexisting with three conditions. Mm. She's in her 70s. She has these two autoimmune conditions, and she has hypertension, which is such a common thing, you know, fact of life for many people in their 70s.
Right.
And she's, you know, kind of powering through it, and she's addressing it with diet and exercise as best she can. I don't see much about her medical regimen in that. She doesn't say that she's taking powerful immune suppressant drugs.
But
things that would be helpful, you know, she didn't ask about that, but, you know, vitamin D would be helpful, certainly, and omega-3 fatty acids.
There's a powerful immunomodulator.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, vitamin D. Make sure your vitamin D status is good.
Yeah.
What do we want? A range between 50 and 80?
For that, for sure.
So? Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it might require high doses to get there.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got an email from Roger. Hi, and thank you both for your hard work and persistence.
I like that comment because, you know, a lot of people acknowledge our hard work, but persistence is...
We persist in these podcasts.
Yes, we persist. We persist in doing them, in finding the time to do them. Because it was like, today it was like, okay, I've got an appointment, and then I'll be free. And then you go, no, but I have an appointment.
Uh-huh.
And then it was like, well, what about tomorrow? It's like... Oh, well, I'll be free tomorrow, but then it's like they added a patient for me tomorrow.
Right.
So it's like, what do we do? So half of it is just sitting down to do it.
What time?
Right. Yeah. Can we carve out some time to do this?
We are persistent in that regard. Yeah. Thank you, Roger. Will you discuss using berberine rather than metformin? Is berberine just as effective as controlling blood sugar as metformin? And is there an issue taking berberine every day?
Okay, so there's some evidence that metformin is a longevity enhancer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it also, it's a diabetes drug, but it also may enhance longevity through a variety of mechanisms, you know, the AMPK system.
Right.
And
Roger is not diabetic, by the way.
Okay, so there's actually an experiment going on in the Bronx now with just older individuals who are being given metformin to assess whether it's going to make them live longer.
Yeah.
You know, whether it statistically enhances their longevity.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly has anti-cancer benefits.
Yes.
So
that might be a primary reason besides diabetes.
It's one of the reasons, but it's not. It's actually going beyond just preventing cancer in terms of extending longevity. It does something to some of the metabolic machinery that somehow slows the aging process itself at a very fundamental level. So it's an interesting substance.
Hmm.
How it works is actually a little mysterious. Sometimes they invent medications and then they discover how they work later. One of the ways that it works is it works on the GI tract. It changes the microbiome. Now, that's not the only way that it works, but that's berberine is also used for blood sugar control.
Yes.
But it is a natural antimicrobial. And
great for diarrhea.
It's great for diarrhea. Many, many years ago, the only reason I was using berberine was for gastrointestinal problems. Somebody has IBS-D with diarrhea and urgency. We'd give them berberine, and it was known to solidify the stool and fight gastrointestinal pathogens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it's been shown to be helpful for blood sugar and also maybe for metabolic syndrome. So it's an insulin sensitizer. They're similar in that they both work on the microbiome. They're probably different in the way that they work outside the GI tract. They probably have effects outside the GI tract.
Yeah.
So is berberine a one-for-one substitution for metformin? No.
No.
Is it similar in its results and its mode of action? Yes. Mm-hmm. Is berberine an anti-aging compound on a par with metformin? Probably not.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But it's a beneficial compound.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And in taking berberine, wouldn't necessarily lower the absorption of certain B vitamins that you would need to amp up when taking metformin.
Metformin interferes with B12 in particular.
B12, maybe folate.
And we have one patient where we really found that, didn't we?
Yeah. B12 just tanked.
Yeah.
So we had to beef him up.
We're giving him metformin for his prostate cancer, and he's doing very well. It's a guy with pretty advanced prostate cancer when it was discovered like 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And
he's doing great.
He's doing really great. But he does it all. He does exercise, diet, he takes a million supplements.
Mm-hmm.
But we can put him on metformin for cancer prevention.
Yeah.
But his B12 went very low.
Mm-hmm.
So we give him a little B12.
Right. And that's an easy fix. You take a supplement, it takes care of that.
Yeah. Warning. Any health professional, you got a patient on metformin, check their B12 level.
Yeah.
Any patient who's on metformin, your doctor hasn't checked the B12 level, get your B12 level checked.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Roger, thank you for that very thoughtful question. Wow. This comes from Martin. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I'm a 72-year-old male. And until recently was very healthy.
Wait, they're all 70 today.
They're all 70s today. Very cool. Well, 70s is the new 50s.
Yeah, right.
Here we go. Thanksgiving, I started to feel tired and noticed a tightness in my chest. I thought I had the flu and tried to fight through it.
Uh-oh.
But I finally saw my primary care physician, was told I had walking pneumonia.
Oh.
And that I needed an x-ray to see if anything else was going on.
Walking pneumonia and the boogie-woogie flu?
Oh, gosh.
You know, there's a song. Do you know that song?
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
and
okay,
the boogie-woogie flu. Well, the x-ray revealed that I had COPD, and now my doctor wants to see me again to discuss how to deal with this.
Okay.
My question for you, Dr. Hoffman, is a pneumonia and flu shot something I should take every winter as a precaution?
So let's talk about it. I think this is a good heads up is, you know, if you feel that way, especially if you're older, my first suspicion when I hear that is, oh my God, this guy's maybe having some heart problems.
Mm.
Well, that wasn't the case, but the pressure he was feeling was due to the heaviness in the chest.
Feels like an elephant sitting on your chest. That's a heart attack and it's emphysema or some such.
Yeah, right.
Right?
So
heart
or lungs. Frankly, it could be heartburn too. It could be, you know, esophagitis, you know, GERD reflux, something.
That's true.
You got to get checked out. That's a part of the body where stuff goes wrong that can be pretty consequential. You don't want to mess with that.
No. Go to the ER.
Yeah.
Even if it was just gas.
Yeah.
Aren't you glad you checked it out?
So evidently this infection may have been long-standing and created some inflammation that is now emphysema or COPD. chronic obstructive pulmonary
disease.
And when your lungs are compromised, it's a little worse when you get a cold or a flu or certainly pneumonia. So he should get the Pneumovax because he's already demonstrated susceptibility to pneumonia. There is a Pneumovax that's like, it's like 21 polyvalent, which means it protects you against 21 strains now of pneumonia.
All in one vaccine.
Right.
21 for one.
And there, I mean, they want everybody over the age of 60 or 65 to take that, but especially if you've got poor lung function and you've had pneumonia, you should take that. Mm-hmm. It's not unreasonable to take the flu vaccine because the flu can be pretty devastating and can be a prelude to a bacterial infection. I mean, here's an example where I'd say it's prudent to take a vaccine. You know, you already have compromised lungs and, you know, one bad bout of the flu could put you in a tailspin.
So, Mark, what do you
think? I mean, am I offending the anti-vaxxers, you know, by saying...
Well, probably, but, you know,
I mean, there's
going to
be some people out there who say Dr. Hoffman's a sellout, you know.
No. This is prudent advice for somebody with COPD.
I think you'd be, you know, even if you think you're healthy and, you know, maybe you're not at risk, okay, you know, you take your chances and it won't be as consequential if you have the flu.
Right.
But if you have really compromised lung function, it's more of a problem. If you have diabetes, say, like type 1 diabetes, type 1 diabetes, typically what happens is, say your average blood sugar is a little high, it's 150, you know, that's not perfect, but it's under control.
Yeah.
As soon as you get the flu, all of a sudden, it's like, what's going on? You finger stick, it's like 300, 400, you lose control of your blood sugar.
Yeah.
And then you could have a hospitalization with diabetic ketoacidosis.
Yes.
Due to the flu.
Right.
Which, you know, messed up your body's metabolism.
And to explain that mechanism of why blood sugar goes up when we're sick, that's the body's alarm system. That's the way the body deals with it. So for those of you who are getting your hemoglobin A1C checked or you were found to have a higher than normal fasting blood sugar, one of the first questions I ask is, did you have a bad cold or were you coming down off the flu or did you have some kind of infection? Because those are the reasons that blood sugar would go up in somebody without diabetes
Speaking of hemoglobin A1C, this is funny.
Yeah.
I was listening to like one of the diet shows on the air that's like paid time on the radio where they strut their stuff, you know, like lose 50 pounds in 40 days, you know, kind of thing.
Oh, that.
And it was like, it was like this guy was bragging. He said, and I saw that patient 2 weeks later and their hemoglobin A1C was better. And I'm laughing.
Yeah.
It sounds good, but I'm laughing because hemoglobin A1C is a test that's done every 3 or 4 months.
Right.
So even if you you really turn things around for 2 weeks, it's just going to it won't do anything to your hemoglobin A1C. You have to wait.
It takes a good 12 weeks.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I guess the guy he didn't go to that class in medical school whatever school in.
Martin, thank you for your question. And by the way, COPD is pretty much progressive, and it's good advice is to take the best care of yourself that you can.
Now, so when you say the doctor wants to tell me, you know, come up with a treatment plan for COPD, treatment for COPD in 2020 is lousy.
Yeah.
It involves using inhalers, but they're not really that effective for
symptom relief.
It's symptom relief. It doesn't affect the course of the disease.
Yeah. Great. Oh, Martin, thank you for your question.
Quick question. Do we have a time for?
We have a quick question from Michael. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. What would be the optimum level of testosterone for a male age 76?
And the answer is depends. Depends on what's going on with you.
Right. What other benefits occur if the testosterone level is optimum? Mine was 385.
Which could be fine.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a little lower than a 20-year-old, college football player.
Right. I do take 50 milligrams of DHEA, but it did not seem to raise my testosterone.
It may not. DHEA sometimes raises testosterone, sometimes doesn't.
So it would just depend.
But it's good. DHEA is fine.
I
think that's fine to take.
Yeah.
So that testosterone, look, are you feeling really exhausted? Are you feeling very depressed? Do you have a big, tire on your midsection? Are you
That's
unable to exercise?
Right.
You know, these are factors that come into play when we decide if someone's going to potentially benefit from testosterone. We saw a patient, by the way, and he was a classic example of someone who could benefit from testosterone. And I can't claim credit for it. He already came. He came to me for diet advice, but he's a relatively young man, mm-hmm. in his mid-50s, mm-hmm. and he came to me after having received testosterone. And I looked at the way that the testosterone was prescribed, and it was quite correct. Mm-hmm. He went to a specialist who really knew how to prescribe testosterone. And I said, what was happening? He says, well, I was falling asleep on the couch. I had no sex drive. I had no initiative. I was feeling depressed. I say, how do you feel now? He goes, I feel great. He says, I'm going to the gym, I'm working out. And he looked good. He looked energetic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was a very successful intervention, mm-hmm. you know. In a younger man, mm-hmm. Who was found to have low testosterone. And he said, he said it was very low. It was like well under, maybe in the hundreds.
Wow.
It was really quite low.
For a man in his mid-50s. Right. Right. That is low. Wow.
So that's a case that really shouts mm-hmm. out for testosterone replacement. It's not like, you're 75 and your testosterone's 3 in the high 300s. That's not too bad. We also look at free testosterone sometimes as a measure of that. But the decision to put a man on testosterone is not just about the number of mm-hmm. their testosterone. It's about what
their
are we trying.
How are they feeling?
What are we trying to achieve? What is the intervention going to allow us to do? Okay, well, on that note, let's sign off for this week.
Yes.
And thanks for joining us. Thanks for sending us all your great emails, great questions this week.
Yes,
Radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com. Keep those questions coming. We'll answer more of them next week. Thank you, Layla.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.